Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 90. Gonna talk some baseball HQ forecaster. The fantasy baseball Bible, as some call it, has been hitting people's houses, not figuratively, but in the mailboxes. So they're coming in hot. I see all the pictures. Still haven't seen it on the left coast, the best coast, but it'll get there eventually. But it'll be fun to talk to a couple members that help contribute to the forecaster like we did last year. It'll be a great time. But first off, business as usual. I am on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on the Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan, how we doing, my friend?
I'm great, man. I'm excited for tonight. We don't usually have guests on the show, and that's pretty much by design. That's kind of your thing with Bench with Bubba. But the couple exceptions we make every year are mostly around the baseball forecasters. So excited to have Corbin and Alan with us tonight. And yes, I am also still waiting my book, but it'll come.
You think you'd have some pull once in a while, but apparently you don't. So that's pretty fun stuff. Let's talk about those aforementioned guests here. One of them, one gentleman, will be in the bottom left quadrant. If you're watching on video, you can find him on Twitter at AC DeLeon, Alan DeLeon Artist. How are we doing, man? Thanks for joining us.
Doing great. Thanks for having me, guys. Good to see you. I didn't get to go to FPAS this year, so I miss seeing you.
Bubba's rubbing it in with the 2023 version of the FPAS.
That's right.
We did miss you this year, man. I remember last year talking with you and Brent Hershey at the bar, like while the Phillies were losing, getting eliminated in the World Series.
Well, that's a great conversation.
Brent's team, and yeah, he put on a good face. But
watching the life drain out of Brent's face,
yeah, in real time.
And the other lovely gentleman joining us tonight, you can find him in the bottom right quadrant of the video. Joined us last year to discuss this. He covers fantasy baseball and fantasy football, and he's pretty much got an article at least out every day. It feels like if you follow him on Twitter, that Twitter is at Corbin_Young21. Corbin Young, how you doing, man?
Good. Yeah, good to see you. You were just talking earlier, you know, I'm buried in target shares and yards after contact, but occasionally, you know, around this time, there is baseball to cover as well.
Yeah, it's fun. I can't remember who I had on about a month ago on Bench with Bubba. They said literally prepping for that show was the first baseball stuff they did. So similar boat as you. They're like, we take our break, we detox, we get over it, because the grind of baseball is long. It's a very, very long grind. And you guys at the Forecaster kind of don't get to enjoy that right away. That was the joke like Ryan and I always make is it the season ends and, you know, you take a month off or whatever, 2 months, whatever people want to take. No, the forecaster writing starts basically like October, let's just say 10th for fun, probably earlier. But it's right away and it goes basically until early November. You got to rock and roll. So we get that PDF out by Thanksgiving. So that's a lot of fun stuff there. But we will jump in this and we'll bounce around and do all kinds of stuff. But let's get to know these gentlemen real quick for those that don't. Alan, we'll start with you. How long have you been with HQ and how long have you been writing the forecaster?
I started writing for HQ in 2019. It actually came about because I'd been attending First Pitch Arizona for a few years, and I got to know Brent over the course of a few of those. And he invited me on board, and it was a great honor. I'd been reading HQ since like 2002. And I've been reading the forecaster since 2000. I have every one of them since then. So it was a great honor to come on board. And so and then the first forecaster I contributed to is the 2020 forecaster. So I guess this year's forecaster would be my fifth.
Awesome. Corbin, is this year two for you?
Yeah, I just finished up year two. And you know, both with the writing for HQ and the forecaster as well.
Awesome. Ryan, what's it like working with these guys? I know I believe you worked with Corbin directly. I don't know if you worked with Alan or not. How was that experience? Let's flip the script for a second. How was that experience for you?
It's funny. So you mentioned like, yeah, the grind of baseball season and it stops, but it's funny, like, cause I work with Corbin and it's pretty much every day we're getting sometimes multiple times, you know, an email back and forth or a page back and forth, like pretty much nonstop from a couple of days after the season ends until, I don't know, we take a couple of days off. Corbin doesn't. I take a couple of days off for first pitch. And then about a week after that, like early mid-November is when it kind of we're done with the player boxes. We move on to the next stage. So it's pretty much nonstop back and forth with Corbin. I also work with Brian Rudd. And so basically like the structure of it's, yeah. So I am Corbin's kind of initial editor along with Brian. And there's a whole like organizational tree almost with like Ron Chandler at the top. There's Brent with the final edits. Ray Murphy does the projections. So we spit out as part of the forecaster boxes, we have a kind of a baseline projection. And as part of actually writing the boxes, we're supposed to look at the projection as well and say, oh, this looks right, this looks off, whatever. And then beneath that level even is like your editors and the writers themselves. So Alan, who did you so like, yeah, I didn't really work with Alan at all. I see the fruits of his labor, which are pretty hilarious and pretty funny, but who was your editor throughout the process? Was it Brent?
It's always been Brent.
Okay. So you just go straight to
the top,
to the man.
Yeah. I just take the escalator right up to the penthouse.
You don't need no middle management like me.
Nah. I think that's how Jock was doing. Jock straight to Brent.
Yeah,
as well.
Brent has a team that goes right to him too.
And it's three of us. It's Jock. It's me, Jock, and Spore.
Oh, that's Paul. Right. Of course, Paul. Well, it helps him going straight to the top. He's like 7 feet tall, so that helps for Paul Spore. And there's no doubt about that. What else do you guys do writing wise for HQ? We'll start with you on this one, Corbin. What else do you write in season for HQ?
The American League Facts and Flukes is kind of what I started with. And then I think I added like the NL East playing time for like a month or two. And then I kind of switch over kind of biweekly for the Arsenal report. And I was splitting that biweekly with Brent, I believe.
Well, what about you, Alan?
So typically I write the playing time tomorrow NL East weekly column. The last year I was on sabbatical. So I actually was just off. But I'm talking to Brent right now, actually. We're starting to organize the assignments heading into next year because some of those articles are starting to trickle out now. Mm-hmm. There was a Playing Time Tomorrow article, I think, that was published today.
Yeah, by Brian Rudd.
That's right. So that, you know, the work, you know, starts a little bit here, drips and drabs, but in earnest, it'll start probably in another month. And then pause a little bit, and then of course for spring training it'll start up in earnest again. And so I'm not actually sure just yet what my assignment will be for next year, but you know, we're working on that, see what will be a good fit.
I heard there's like an article that comes out Tuesday or Wednesday. It comes out once a week. You could probably take it from that guy. He's so busy with other things. You could probably look into that article. Ryan, you think that article's available, or is that not going anywhere?
I don't know. You can take it from me.
I'm kidding. There's daily matchups articles. You can take those from me. No problem.
That's right.
That's right. You can have those. Yeah. I kid. Let's talk forecaster, though. That's kind of what we're here to do, and it's fun. And like, we kind of hinted at it. We talked about it off air. But what's fun about, at least for me, from the outside looking in, like I said, I'm the only one on this show that doesn't write for the forecaster. And so it's fun seeing like it's a structured format, obviously, and we want to get X, Y, and Z across, and you only have so much amount in a box you can write to get X, Y, and Z across, but you still get to use your personality, and that's fun about it. Like Alan gets to do this thing, Corbin does this thing. I remember Jock talked about some of his stuff last year. Like all these guys get to kind of have their voice be heard, which is fun. So it's not just like a, you know, you got to follow the format, the script. Let's start with you on this one, Alan. When you're doing your forecaster work, the process, and that's, we could talk about, we'll obviously stick to the forecast work. When we do any article as writers, there's a process. It's very simple. So how do you start your process for the forecaster?
Well, you know, the first thing I do is I turn off the spigot on fantasy baseball. I just, as soon as the season's over, I stop looking at baseball stuff because I need a break. You know, and that break is actually really important for me, especially heading into writing something like the forecaster, because, you know, you spend 7-8 months, actually all year, creating these narratives around these players and just the, you know, the absolute torrent of numbers, right? And I think it's important to take a step back from all of those narratives and say, okay, you know, that's what happened. and then have a fresh look at the numbers when they come in those initial projections. And I'm often surprised. I mean, I've been looking at some of these players almost every day, you know, for a whole season. And then somehow those projections get put in front of me with the stats from this past season and previous seasons. And I go, what? Is this the same player that I've been following all season? How did I miss this? So that pause for me is really important. It's about a couple of weeks, you know, before we actually dive into the forecaster projections.
It makes
sense. Formulate ideas.
It makes sense because we all have our biases. Corbin, when do you get started on this? Because, you know, we joke about it, but I used to do football and baseball, and I stopped doing football because it's just a lot. And so you're doing football probably starting summertime when baseball's going strong, and then it starts all colliding together. So when do you kind of get going on your forecaster?
Yeah, summer is definitely a busy time. It's like, you know, peak of baseball season and also peak of fantasy football season, and like just clashes. But yeah, I mean, whatever that time is, like late September or October or whatever that is. So, you know, I'm like already deep into fantasy football. It is kind of a nice change of pace because, you know, there's no other things being updated, right? Like baseball has ended. We're just looking at the numbers, you know, we're reading the, you know, like Alan said, just kind of going back and be like, what happened? You know, like, because there's so many players in baseball where it's like, I kind of know what somebody did, but it's like they weren't on my team or I wasn't tracking regularly. It's like, I don't even know what this player did. So it's, you know, it's probably a little bit of just like taking that break and then relooking at, I always start with the spreadsheet we get, right? It's like, start there, like study that thing, look it up and down, see if there's anything weird or cool on it. And then, you know, usually I'll go through a lot of like the player news and just like, see if there's any injury or something that like, you know, maybe I wasn't paying attention to, or I forgot because my brain had shifted over to something else.
Yeah, when I see like, so, and kind of how it works is when, and how these guys get their empty player boxes is basically we divvy these, you know, I think there's like almost 60 different pages of hitters and then seven hitters on each page. We divvy them up and then I basically send that out to Corbin Bryan with like an Excel sheet. And when you open that Excel sheet, it's basically the box that everyone sees in the forecaster with the stats and the projection, and then a sometimes daunting blank white space. And you stare at that blank white space, and sometimes for me it's like, how do I even get started on this guy? So I'll throw this out to you because I have some of my own strategies, but like, you're looking at, and Alan, I'll start with you, I guess, you're looking at that white box and you get a player. Where do you start? What stats do you look at? Do you look at the play? Like, do you see a Miles Straw versus an Aaron Judge and differ your approach that way? Or do you treat them all the same? What are you actually looking at in the player box? Are you looking at news, a combination of things? Like, what does that process start when you see that blank white box open up on your screen for the first time?
So, you know, one of the first things that I do, I have, you know, I have several windows open, and one of the first things that I look at is like NBC Sports Edge or something newsy that will remind me of the, you know, like the chronology of events for that player for the year. You know, tell me all of the highlights, you know, in kind of a narrative form, basically, that happened. And so what that will capture is, above all, injuries, you know, not just when they get placed on the IL, when they get sent to the minors for rehab, when they get reactivated, but sometimes when they sit out, you know, and they don't get put on the IL. Oh, he's complaining about a sore knee, but he played. Oh, he's been nursing a sore back, but he played. Okay, that's interesting to note, because then you can look at the numbers, and I mean, it's not always a slam dunk, you know, open and shut case. Like, oh, look, you know, his back hurt and his, you know, he started batting 190 for the next 5 weeks. But that's the kind of thing that I would want to take note of. So the news piece, the news angle, it, you know, kind of provides a narrative framework for the capsule. And I'll often get an idea for the shape of the capsule, if that makes sense. Just by outlining the news items. And then beyond that, you know, I start to look at individual stats, things that harmonize or disharmonize. Anything that seems to line up really well, like when the skills metrics line up really well with the outcomes. Okay, so it seems like maybe the outcomes were supported by the skills. Great, noted. Or the opposite, obviously. You know, you've got these amazing outcomes, and then the skills are just like, you know, very pedestrian. You know, okay, well, might have to look into that a little more carefully and see if that was actually repeatable, or if that's a whole bunch of luck or what. Yeah, just digging into anything that really sticks out a lot. The hardest boxes are the ones that are, like, for lack of a better word, kind of flat, where nothing actually really sticks out at all.
Yep.
And then you have to really dig deeper, and you have to look harder and see, okay, is there something I'm missing? There's not something obvious. So, you know, where else can I look? How else can I shape a take? Something that's valuable, something that's informative and maybe even entertaining. So that, you know, in the few words that we have to fill the capsule, that we can communicate a whole bunch of ideas. And you know, the person reading it can feel like, hey, that was worthwhile. I know something about this player. It's actionable, right? What I just read is, I can take that to the draft table and use it.
Were there any players you wrote about this year that stand out in that kind of middle tier you're discussing that you looked at and it wasn't like, you know, Captain Obvious type stuff?
So that's not, that's a good question. I've got a few guys that, for the guys that are kind of in the middle tier, sometimes I resort to jokes because
we'd get along well then.
Because why not? You know, it's an opportunity. I mean, I try not to abdicate my role as an analyst to, you know, just to pure comedy, because that's actually something that Brent tells us before we start writing. You know, we get a reminder sheet with some pointers, and one of them is about humor. You know, it's paraphrasing it. It's like, you know, it's okay to be funny sometimes, but don't be funny to the detriment of the analysis. You know, don't be funny and then pass up on saying something valuable about the guy's performance that might actually matter, you know, come next year. So I can't, off the top of my head, I can't remember any of those flat guys, but we'll probably cover a couple of them, you know, as we move along in the conversation.
Cool.
How about you, Corbin? When I send you that email, you got Mitch Keller's box. What are we looking at?
Well, I was going to say, I usually try to just like take the name, you know, of the player out of it as much as I can, right? And just look at the numbers and, you know, I'm usually having that spreadsheet as my primary, and then I'm opening up, you know, the kind of player page on HQ and just looking, you know, other splits and just peeking through and just poking around. I mean, it's hard to not get excited when Ryan sends me Mitch Keller in one of the first pitcher documents, and I'm just like staring at it at the, you know, top of the page. Or maybe the next one that comes in and says Jesus Luzardo on it, and I'm just like, oh man, like, Is this real? Is this like, did he mean to do this? But you know, it's like with that, yeah, it is easy to, you know, have that just like subconsciously, like that bias already get in. And I'm like, okay, I gotta just look at it as like, what do the numbers say here? You know, as much as I can. And it's not easy. You know, a lot of times we get attached to certain players and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I'd agree. Some of the harder ones are either where there's not a whole lot of things that stick out, or there's like a weird injury stuff where, like, I think I had like Trevor Story or something, right? And it's like hard to be like, oh,
you did.
You don't want to just, yeah, you don't want to just be like, it's a lost season, you know, forget about it. Kind of got to look into it a little bit and just, you know, so those are kind of hard too.
I have a quick question kind of in that vein, where Ryan used the example of like Judge versus Miles Straw. So you have like, you know, those super easy, but at the same time, there would be so much to write about a guy, it's hard to fit in the box, because Aaron Judge just jumps off the page in every stat, basically. And then you got Miles Straw, where you're sitting there going, how can I fill the box besides saying he runs a lot, but he doesn't get on base and he's not that good? How do we go about this? So we'll start, go back to you on this one, Alan. Do you prefer the judge type boxes or the straw type boxes? The kind of, you know, the really, really good player, but you have to shrink it down, or the one where you have to find a way to elaborate on the situation?
Sometimes with the really good players, there's not that much to say, to be honest.
Like we could, obviously, he's so good.
Yeah, you could repeat like all the great things that they do, right? But at a certain point, it's like everybody can see the box, so they can see the numbers, right? So with some of the really good players, you actually have a little bit of latitude, because it's what more am I going to add to the analysis? I mean, unless something is sticking out. If I'm looking at Judge's box and I notice like, hey, look, in the second half, his contact rate dipped 10 percentage points, while his power index slipped, 30 points, but otherwise everything else stayed the same. Like, well, I'm definitely going to pick on that. But if everything is, let's say standard Judge level stuff, yeah, then you might have a little fun with it. Okay. And Miles Straw, actually, I would even say like a guy like Miles Straw that has a skill that stands out, let's say like speed, right? There's actually quite a bit to talk about when it comes to players like that, because you're trying to mine the edges of the player pool for value. And a guy like Miles Straw might get overlooked by a lot of people. They're like, oh yeah, I drafted him last year, a couple of years ago, he burned me. I don't really care about him anymore. That's often the guys who will pop and surprise everybody the next year when, their inherent skills, their underlying skills get overlooked because of a couple of years of poor performance, poor outcomes. And then they just, they can slip under the radar. So if there's something still interesting in a Miles Straw type, even if he hasn't delivered in a couple of years, that could be interesting from an analytical standpoint.
Actually, so while you're talking, I'm looking. I actually did Miles Straw's box. I don't know how we're going down this Miles Straw rabbit hole.
It was the example you gave, my friend. I'm just rolling with you.
Your words.
Yours truly actually wrote him up, and I kind of remember that. But sometimes I totally black out and don't remember the guys I wrote.
What about you, Corbin? Do you prefer the judge side of things or the or do you prefer like the Jesus Lizardo, Mitch Kellers of the world, or do you prefer, someone else just, kind of not great, like Alex Wood, maybe?
I mean, I love the pitchers,
That's why I changed the example for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think my problem is, I'll happily own up to this. My problem is I go a little too deep and I'm like touching on too many things and Ryan trying to reel me in. It's like, looking at too many things, right? Or I'm picking out too many things, and so I know that. But I think some of the hard ones are like, some of the better players when they're just consistently good. Juan Soto was one where it was like hard, but it was also like just kind of like kind of the same old story, but maybe there's something else in there. Even some of those outlier players when maybe they played a ton this year or something, it's like, is that sustainable? That kind of thing. But I'd rather look at the crappy players like Jordan Lyles. It's fun to dig into a player that you probably never really looked at for most of the season.
You're talking to a guy that studies catchers for a living. So we are good on this one, guys. I get you. But to your Jordan Lyles example, and especially in the pitching world, and we're not going to make this whole pitching podcast, but you need to, like, we talk about the glob, and then after the glob, it starts dropping off quicker and quicker. So digging into guys like that's probably way more beneficial. Back to Alan's like example of you need to find the value at the ends, and the pitching side of it, digging into those guys could probably benefit in a big, big way. Ryan kind of hinted at it earlier, and we'll go to Corbin on this one, and we'll go to Alan after. What stats do you guys like to focus on when you're writing? Because, there's the baseball savants of the world. HQ obviously has their great list of stats. You get your sheets with projections on it. What do you prefer to start with, Corbin, when you kind of mold your player boxes?
I mean, I'm probably oversimplifying, but just kind of like looking at some of the expected versus actual output, right? And just kind of looking at some of that, seeing if some of those line up, seeing if, like we talked about earlier, do the skills line up with output, or – you know, if they don't, if it's an outlier, you know, is there an injury or something weird we can poke at? But mostly just, you know, kind of that. I think there's a lot of avenues we could go down, but when we only have whatever 55 words to put in there, it's like, you know, just focusing on what's, you know, most important out of there instead of picking out too many things, because we could easily spend an hour talking about one player and is that worth it? Probably not.
I'm glad you said it, because I've been wondering, there's 55 words that explains. So to the listeners out there, just picture that in your brain, like 55 words to give every person that reads those boxes what they need to know for what happened in 2023 and to what look for in 2024 in 55 words.
Alan, and not only to do it in 55, but like there are, I think we do in total over 800 players. So like, not only is it 55 words, but like, you've got to mix it up. Like if every single box is the same format and the same type of thing you're talking about, for the reader, that's not as engaging. And so, yeah, it's just, I think that's a big challenge of it too, is not just the brevity, but you need to be able to kind of mix it up a little bit, look at different stats for different guys, depending on the situation.
What about you, Alan? What do you kind of go to as a starting point or a main statistical viewpoint?
I try to start with just what's on the page, you know, because we're the forecaster, you know, is linked to Baseball HQ. There are Baseball HQ specific stats and metrics that are very good, and so, you know, we want to make sure that we are using the stats that are available, you know, to the reader right in front of them, and not reach too much occasionally, but not too much beyond what's on the page and what is on the site. Because, you know, readers of Baseball HQ will recognize, you know, some of the branded metrics like BPX, you know, or a power index, a PX or XPX. And so, I really try to use those. And one exercise that we're all asked to do before we start our writing by Brent is to reread the Encyclopedia of Fanalytics at the beginning of the book, which is a good, I don't know, maybe 30, 35 pages. It's a lot. And the funny thing is, like, you know, we write about this stuff all year, and then for the forecaster, and, you know, even I will crack open the Encyclopedia of Fanalytics as my warm-up exercise to get ready for forecaster writing, and I'll go, oh right, that's what goes into the BPX calculation, right? You know, I have a notion of it, and sometimes it's not like I'm not calculating it myself all the time, and so it's good to be reminded of the relationship between the metrics and how the, you know, to lift the hood and remind, you know, be reminded of how they actually work by looking at the formulas again. But, you know, I and other writers, if you go leaf through the book, you'll notice that, for example, in the pitching section, we'll make references to things like pitch mix, you know, or the, you know, swing strike rate for a particular pitch. Yeah, that's not on the page. That's true. But those, you know, as long as we're not doing that for every single player and constantly referencing stats that are not on the page, you know, it's okay to add that kind of external, you know, data in order to make a point about the player and what we are seeing in the stat box.
Perfect. That's very interesting to me, because I gave Ryan a hard time a couple of years ago when we kind of started doing this stuff, and I was new to just doing daily matchups, and I'm going over the encyclopedia and I'm like, my goodness. And they're great stats. That's the thing. It's like, I'm a very sarcastic person. Obviously most people that listen to the show know this by now, but the stats are amazing, but it's like, they, like you said, you get the encyclopedia, it's 35 pages long, and you're like, what in the world are we doing here? But if you learn them, it makes it so much easier, like you're saying.
Some of them are different. Like we use, and we have been using, I would say this is even before strikeout rate, we use contact rate instead of what like FanGraphs would use or what's more commonly cited as strikeout rate. So a lot of times it's that
crossover.
It's that, just that shift. And like, you don't see a PX or XPX on Fangraphs. And so I know, like, for you, Bubba, yeah, when you're coming into it, to writing for HQ on the outside, so to speak, it is a bit of a learning curve to
and when you live on Fangraphs 24/7 and you come over and you start using it, it's like, whoa, that shifted a little bit. But once you learn it, it's pretty darn awesome.
Yeah, I grew up on that stuff. So did you, Alan. I mean, going from 2000, like this stuff, especially PX, contact rate, that stuff's been around for 30, 35 plus years.
Long time. And I look at those sites too, of course. Like, who doesn't look at Fangraphs? Who doesn't look at Savant at this point? Other things like Alex Chamberlain's pitch
leaderboard.
The pitch leaderboard, that's fantastic. That's a really, really great resource.
Yep. Pretty darn awesome.
Yeah. We used to have, we did recently migrate, maybe, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago to like strikeout rate and walk rate. But do you guys remember Dom and CTL and CMV? Those were the old like K per nine, walk per nines, and then strikeout divided by walks.
Well, that was pre-me, thank goodness.
That was, we switched over to strikeout rate. Maybe it was a few years ago now, but even that, somewhat recently was different on the boxes.
Yeah, that was really quaint.
Yep.
I mean, it was just as informative. It's just that because all of those other metrics are so much more, in use, it's like you're paddling upstream trying to make a point where there's no functional difference in terms of what you're trying to communicate. You're just labeling it differently. So like, let's maybe just change the label so that everybody understands and, we can move on. I didn't have a vote in it, but I thought it made sense when we made the switch over.
Corbin, real quick, what's harder, the Baseball HQ Encyclopedia or the litany of football stats?
It took a learning curve for me to like learn some of the Baseball HQ stuff too, right? Like just language wise, like, just taking on some of the facts proof stuff. I was like, all right, I gotta make sure I understand the words that I'm using here, the acronym and stuff like that. Football is a little, I don't say easier, but there's like less important things to look at. I think, baseball is just like, there's so many pieces to the pie that you could look at 10 things and be like, all these 10 things are important. Yep. But then it's like, but football is a little more like, we can look at a few things and get a good idea of like what's happening. And there's just more, and I don't have the statistical data on this, but I feel like there's more randomness in football where it's like, touchdowns, like how predictable are some of those things, right? And like some of these other things that, where it's like, home runs, at least we can look at some skills behind that, right? Yeah. Instead of Jalen Hurts getting pushed behind and falling into the end zone 12 times, it has its own language too, right? Like there's sometimes where I'll pull the stand, someone will go, what the heck is a whopper, right?
Yep.
I'm like, weighted opportunity rating,
I remember when I first heard that back in the day, I was like, what in the world? Burger King and football?
Never heard that. I've eaten plenty. I've never heard of the.
I know what Corbin's talking about now, but yeah, I get you. All right, let's do some player boxes stuff. This is going to be real fun now because now we get to see your guys' love and maybe frustration throughout the process here of the love-hate relationship with players. We'll start with you on this one, Corbin. We'll go one at a time. We'll go back and forth, and we'll start with favorite box. We'll start positive on this thing here. And just because your editor is here does not mean you have to hold up back punches, okay? Everything is on the table here, Corbin. Yep. But you already were very kind to him about these people you're going to talk about. So what was your first favorite player box?
I mean, yeah, after whatever, like three hitter pages, it was like, here's the pitcher one. And I think Mitch Keller was the first name on the top of the page. And I was just like, oh, thank you. Like, this is intentional. But it's just fun to write about.
Somewhat intentional. I knew you. You for those that don't know, the kind of the inside joke Corbin did. Corbin was a huge Mitch Keller fan entering the season. Actually, it's interesting. And that's why I gave you the box, is I wanted to see like you were huge on Keller, and he was good, and you wrote some really good stuff about him on HQ. And kind of what Alan was talking about earlier is like, okay, now we step away for a week, season's over. I'm going to kind of eliminate those biases and try and write a box. So that was semi-intentional, man.
Yeah. I mean, part of why we do this is like, it's fun. Right. So I think it's like, it's cool to have like, and it's like, you know, write about players that we like, write fun about fun players. Right. And so that's, you know, there's some personal bias there. And pitchers are fun because there's so many things to look into, right? Like some pitch mix changes, you know, maybe first, you know, some regression based on some of the luck metrics and like, you know, and then some of those shifting. And it's, most of that's kind of what I noted with Kelly there. It's just kind of a little more ground balls, some pitch mix changes, you know, and just, I mean, I think there's some good volume there, right? Like some people have this, you know, it goes the other way, right? Some people have some of this negative bias against someone like Mitch Keller that's kind of burned them for multiple years. And then it's like, you know, stay away. But it's like, I think, you know, if we're seeing some legitimate changes and, you know, things happening off the field with all those hype videos of him going to Tread Athletics. I mean, you know, you all know that I like fitness and working out. I'm like, that just sucks me in, right? Like, you know, somebody's got to post a hype video of them working out and training and doing things that athletes do. Like, hell yeah.
One of the things with Keller, I mean, just to kind of deep dive a little bit more into Keller, and this again goes back to what Alan was saying, is like we take a look at the box, and we both saw Corbin, like the second half for Keller, first half to second half, 3.24 ERA or 3.34 ERA in the first half, 5.24 in the second half, 1.10 WHIP in the first half, 1.41 in the second half. To me, it was like, man, was he as good as we thought? Or was that second half collapse almost? Was that skill-based? Was that luck? I mean, we've got the box in front of us, but how did you kind of weigh that second half collapse from your boy? And did you pin it more on skills or luck?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, when you look at the box, it's interesting, right? Like swing and strike rate goes up a little bit, you know, and we're seeing, you know, yep, strikeout rate go down, and it's like, that's kind of weird, right? And but then, you know, there's some of the other luck factors bumping up there, like, you know, again, if we're simplifying just based on kind of the xERA and xWHIP, like we're seeing some, you know, positivity there. And so, you know, I for me, I think it's just kind of one of those things where it's like arbitrary cutoff for a second half, right? Like we could be looking at last month or a different, you know, split and just kind of looking through that. I mean, I don't know where he's going in drafts, but he just feels like one of those like SP3, SP4 kind of guys that, you know, it's like it could go either way, right? Like some of those guys, like maybe like a Pablo Lopez or Sonny Gray of this kind of year, right? Where it's kind of in the middle, right? They've done some good, they've done some bad. And, you know, if you pick the right one and you get a Pablo Lopez or Sonny Gray from multi-season, you're feeling good, you know? So I think it's kind of one of those guys, and you know, I would project, like, I like the projection there of just the volume of like a guy that's giving you maybe a 180 innings, 4 ERA, like, you know, with, you know, not everybody can be a dominant pitcher, but a guy that's like average, above average, that I like. So I'm a little more biased in some of this. Skills looking better, even though the results were terrible, you know?
Yep. Well, there's a lot to be said about that.
All right, Alan, what about you?
I'm curious, how much did you roster Keller?
As much as I could, but you know, the problem is when you talk about players, right? You'd say you like someone,
uh-huh,
and then there's hype, like, you know, preseason stuff, then that changes things. So that was always hard. Probably not as much as I'd like, but whenever I did, I was like cheering, and people would be like, what's wrong with you? Like, why are you happy that you got this guy that's been awful? And I'm like, just wait.
We know you've been in football land, but since you've been gone, Bubba's already known as like the Luis Rengifo guy, the Bo Naylor guy. And it'll be, yeah, it's interesting once like March hits, do you actually get those guys on your squad or not?
Not as fun anymore.
No.
Alan, who was your first guy off the board that was one of your favorites?
Well, one of my favorite boxes, not necessarily favorite player, mind you, or favorite projection, but one of my favorite boxes was AJ Puck, because I'm a giant nerd, and I went with a creative capsule for AJ
Puck.
It's
pretty good.
And I'll read it if you want to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Go for
Shakespeare's,
it.
Shakespeare's Puck is a mischievous sprite deeply involved in the outcomes of the play. So was this one, whose value was in amassing wins and saves. Missed 3 weeks due to elbow soreness, otherwise posted best skills season to date. Meddlesome hit rate and poor save percentage cost him the closer role, but BPX tells the real story. Flighty, yet powerful.
It's good stuff. It's real good.
You know, all that to say that, you know, I mean, AJ Puck has been on our radar for years as this potentially amazing, you know, left-handed originally starter, right?
Yep.
With devastating stuff, and he just can't stay healthy, except last couple of seasons he's been able to stay healthy enough to be an effective reliever. And you know, he had a really good first half. You know, results wise, it 2.88 ERA, 1.04 WHIP. The second half looks like a collapse, 4.83 ERA and a 1.29 WHIP. But if you start looking under the hood, the skills were even better in the second half. You know, the BPX, which is a, you know, measure of pitcher skills, kind of like a one number to give you an overall sense of the pitcher skills, that went up from 184 in the first half to 238 in the second half,
which is really, BPX. Which is really good, which is 100 is league average. So
100 is league average. That's right. And so 238 is more than closer worthy. Like that's elite stuff.
Yep.
So we're talking about a guy who, yes, still has to stay healthy in order to make good on the promise, but the promise is there. So, you know, I guess I also liked him as a player to kind of, you know, take a chance on. Some people are going to, you know, remember the injuries and go, I don't think I'm going to really prioritize AJ Puck. And I don't even really know how this, you know, closer situation will, you know, will work itself out in Miami just yet. But regardless of all of that, we know what the turnover is for closers and saves. And this is a guy who, even if he doesn't start with the closer role, because of his skills, he could easily do the job.
I believe there's some guy at HQ that once said draft skills, not roles. I believe that was a term that was utilized there. Just throwing it out there.
It might and, be the founder.
This might work, like Godfather or something. I don't know. There's some term. And he's got a new book, too, if you guys want to go check it out. But, yeah, that's interesting. When you were talking, I was looking at the first half, second half splits, and then you, like you say, start looking under the hood of the X numbers and all that stuff. And surprisingly, very, very, even just strike it right was better. K to walk was better. That's a stat Ryan and I talk about all the time on the show. Like, these are all things that you look for in a big, big way, especially in guys to potentially get closers roles, because right now in early draft season, it's Tanner Scott, because he had a great second half too. There's no denying that. He was awesome, racking up saves. We talked about one of the best pickups you could have made in Fab in the second half of the season. But when you look at Puck's numbers, like you could see, we've seen Scott scuffle before in his career. You wouldn't be shocked if, like you're saying, Alan, that Puck somehow slides right back in there and starts getting stuff done. This is why I need to read the forecaster. It needs to come in the mail because I'm more of a hard copy guy, not a PDF guy. So this is important for me.
You don't do those computers, do you? one big thing I'll just add to what Alan was saying is with the forecaster, with these player boxes, we are pretty much instructed to just look at the skills. And so like this example with Puck, it's like we don't want to be saying we don't know if he can get the Miami closer role because of Tanner Scott, because Tanner Scott might get traded. And then in February, like that commentary is pretty much irrelevant. So we pretty much stick to, like, in Puck's case, are the skill, if he were to be the closer, are the skills good enough for him to, you know, stay in that role, or could he be like a top 10 guy based on the skills if he was given the role? So that's just an interesting thing where like we really try to not focus on playing time or roles, because so much can change. Again, we're writing these in October. So much can change from that time until, you know, January, February.
All right, Corbin, let's talk about your other pitcher that you thoroughly enjoyed in your player boxes.
Yeah, again, you know, keeping things fun, right? Jesus Luzardo, I mean, that was just another fun kind of favorite box, a player that I liked coming into 2022. And, you know, at it, you know, consistently has, you know, two kind of whiff pitchers there and, you know, stayed healthy. There are some of those health concerns, you know, linking back down to with AJ Puck, right? Some health concerns and stayed healthy. And there's some volumes there. And yeah, just a, yeah, right. I think there's really another step forward here, you know, especially if some of the wins come in there, but skills are all there and, you know, hard to not love Luzardo.
Yep, I'm 100% with you. It's the guy I've been buying in on a lot early on here from pretty much everything your box talks about with Jesus Luzardo. So big, big fan on that one. Anything else you got on Jesus Lizard, Mr. Bloomfield?
God, that's a nickname.
I'll be here all night.
We made the point in the box to say, because these metrics are all kind of in the box, was not only given the he stayed off the IL, and so the innings went from what 100 to 179, but we've got velocity and we split it out first half, second half. The velocity was up from 2022 and it held firm in the second half, like that entire time, save with the swinging strike rate for Luzardo. So it's not only like, yes, did he reach new heights and finally stay healthy? It was, what did that second half look like? Like, was he just limping to the finish because he's uncharted territory from like a workload standpoint? In Lizardo's case, like not at all. Second half skills were pretty much on par with what we saw in the first half. So, yeah, I was impressed with that one.
All right, Alan, who's your next guy? Because I just read the box and my goodness.
To pivot from not as impressed with the player, impressed with the commentary, but not.
And I
not
say my goodness in a very, very good way. Like I am thoroughly enjoying this one. And if I were not to listen to this show and I was flipping through the pages of the forecaster and came across that one, you win. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, you know, before I read the box or even mention the player, I want to say, you know, if we can add even a little bit of entertainment to all of this data and information, that's, you know, that's good. We want people to enjoy reading it. And so, yeah, thanks. I really appreciate that. Yeah, this is an example of one of those players you were asking me before who's just kind of a nondescript player, you know? I mean, but this isn't even like a Miles Straw. Miles Straw is like Aaron Judge compared to this guy. So, so this is Jason DeLay. Catcher from Pittsburgh, in case you weren't familiar. And the box reads one home run, 18 RBI, 251 average, and 181 plate appearances at Pittsburgh. Unless you're desperate, and we mean like drinking your own urine after a plane crash in the Andes and contemplating cannibalism desperate, to play an actual live human as your second catcher, who might hit his only home run or steal his only base all year when you happen to play him, don't delay here. We repeat, do not delay.
So good. So good. That's
that wraps it up pretty good.
Yep.
That's so good. I, you know, and in this case, it's like, do I need to really go into the analysis?
No.
That much more?
You did already.
Really.
So good.
I think I said enough.
Oh, man. That's amazing. Oh, I don't even know where to go from there. That's so, so good. All right. I'll let you have the floor on this one.
Did Jason, did DeLay make your top 49, Bubba?
No. Jason DeLay is Jason DeLay will not be in the black book for the this is my fifth year doing catchers. He has not made it one time. So I think we're still good there.
But you don't need to come up with some other type.
Yeah, I usually do 45 to 50 catchers, sometimes more, sometimes less. He's never made the list. So we're good on that one.
And it's funny, like, so, and as a reader of the forecaster, there are these gems like littered everywhere with these. Not even like to what Alan was saying, like not even nondescript guys, just like bad. And like a lot of times I won't read, I'll just look at Jason DeLay and I'll kind of skip over it. But like just saying there are gems like this throughout. And it's not your like, so like the next box was Rafael Devers. Like obviously you're not going to do something like that on Devers box. There's important fantasy implications and things to say. But Tony, if you just kind of scroll through second catcher, middle reliever type guys, like there's, I don't know if anything that good, to be honest with you, but there's always some good little gems in there.
That's amazing. All right, let's go to the hardest boxes now. This kind of goes to our my question earlier, and we'll start with you on this one, Corbin. Your first pitcher is a pitcher that Ryan and I basically waxed poetically and cried about almost every episode of Bubba and the Bloom last year.
Yeah. Not to throw like a football analogy into this, but it's like, right, if you pay attention to football, like Jamal Williams, right? Jamal Williams of the Lions kept scoring touchdowns. I mean, eventually regression's got to happen, right? Mm-hmm. Nope. And it's like one of those things where, it's like I was high on Lance Lynn. I just love a guy that, you know, is going to try to beat you with like 25 different fastballs, right? And just outcraft you basically. It was one of those where, you know, I was trying to look at it just on the numbers. And if I took away Lance Lynn's name, I'd be like, well, I don't like this guy at all. Yeah. It's like, you look at regression could happen. And it's like, oh, but skills got even worse. And it's definitely a pretty scary box. And it was hard because it was one of those where it's like, you know, kind of going in optimistically and again taking that break off from baseball, right, kind of just like shoving that out of my memory of what Lanson looked like, and then looking at it, I was like, wow, it was real bad. I think I left him in my lineup a lot. It's like maybe that's why those teams weren't so good.
Yeah, the second half numbers are even worse than I thought looking at them. Like, my goodness, that's brutal stuff right there.
Well, we thought with the trade to LA, and actually, like, I mean, a few starts after the trade, like, it did start to turn around, and then it didn't. And we did make that point in the box to say, like, yes, we did call out the trade to LA, but the second half skills were just, God, it was brutal. Did not expect that post-trade.
All right, Alan, who is your first hardest box?
Man, Carlos Rodon. Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's kind of an easy box because we all saw it. You know, and it was, it's, I mean, the outcome was a surprise, meaning like nobody expected him to be that bad coming off of, you know, the two very nice seasons that he had previously. But I mean, it was just an abomination. I mean, it was so bad. And of course he was injured. And so, you know, you look at it and you go, well, yeah, how much did the injury have to do with that? Is this something where we're looking at a guy who, had a breakout season and then a follow-up and then just completely lost all of that skill? Or, you know, is it injury-related, which is obviously what we're all hoping for, at least those of us who still have him on Dynasty and Keeper teams. And can some rest and rehab and maybe a mental reset address whatever was ailing him last year? Because I mean, he had nothing going right. And the fastball was getting hit. The slider was not nearly as sharp as it was the previous seasons. And he got hit hard and he got hit often. It was not a fluke. So it was just painful to watch. I happen to have him on one of my home league teams, and I've had this team for 25 years. And so I follow that team, you know, pretty closely. And so, you know, I watched most of his starts, and I mean, it was painful. It was painful. I fell for that guy. And then to do that on the biggest stage in Yankee Stadium in New York, it's just rubbing salt in the wound every time. I think that was like out of compassion, I chose Carlos Rodon's capsule because it was just hard to, it was hard to revisit it in a way. But the takeaway, I guess, was that, you know, you do, even though he validated the performance from 2001, from 2021 in 2022, and you see that and you go, oh, well, I guess 21 wasn't a fluke. Now you got to look at it and go, well, even if it wasn't a fluke, this may be where we are now for whatever reason, whether it's physical or mental or you know, loss of stuff because, you know, he's just changed something about how he's gripping the ball, or who knows, maybe the team. There's so many factors. There's so many variables that could be at play here. And so the one thing that I wrote in the box is that, yeah, as bad as it was last year, at least it was only a handful of innings.
Yeah.
The worst case scenario isn't a repeat of last year. It's that he pitches like 150 innings and has lost his skills.
We call that the Lance Lynn or the Alec Manoa at times.
Manoa. Yeah.
Yeah. That's even worse.
Right.
Makes me want to go look up Manoa's box now out of curiosity. But yeah, Rodon, he's a tough one. Ryan and I were actually doing an underdog draft last night. We were texting about Rodon, like, still on the board and his ADP. We're still confused about why he's going so high. And it's a weird one right now. Corbin, you mentioned this next pitcher earlier in the show. So did you find something interesting when you dug into him as one of your hardest boxes?
I mean, yeah, Jordan Lyles. Like, I remember looking at the box and I was like, bad, 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 right? Just like along the board. And it's like, wow, this dude just eats innings, right? Like 11th most innings the past three seasons, like just one of the worst ERAs, like with Patrick Corbin. Yay, that's a great category to be in, right? Where you eat innings and you're terrible.
And it's like, bro, eats innings, just a long list.
Destroys ratio.
It's like a CVS receipt.
It's like, well, I guess he doesn't walk many guys. That's about it. But yeah, it's one of those where it's hard because it's like, I mean, I got to find a little bit of optimism, right? Like, there's got to be some optimism here.
Well, then look at Corbin throws a little comedy at the end of this one. This is good stuff. It was really good.
That one might have been, Corbin, I don't know if you remember, that one might have been added post editing.
Yeah, I think so. I don't even, yeah, it wasn't me. Can't claim that one.
Yeah, I was about to say, look at that.
It is a good one.
It's very good at the end there. Alan, are you editing pages without us knowing?
No, I haven't been asked to edit.
Okay. Sometimes after it goes up through me, sometimes there's still changes that get made to it through the last few. But yeah, the final line in Jordan Lyles' box is pretty good. But other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? Which I thought was pretty good, but I couldn't claim something like that.
Let me tell you, Brent and Ray have pretty good senses of humor.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I can legit see Ray saying that out loud. Now that you mention it, I could really see Ray saying that one.
Yeah. I'm having them on. I'm hosting on the HQ site. I'm having Ray, Brent, and Ron on Thursday night. I may ask that one. Who did it?
Make a note.
Who did it?
All right, Alan. Who's your next hardest box? And I think this. I'm really curious here because this is a guy I'm having a very difficult time deciphering what I want to do with in 2024.
Cole Reagans. Yep. Yeah. So why was it hard? Because do we believe what we saw? I mean, it's so hard to believe, you know, like the opening line was that I wrote was the Cinderella man of 2023. I mean, this guy was toiling in the bullpen in Texas, not particularly well. He had already, you know, we'd already seen the bump in velocity. So that was evident. You know, he gained an average of 4 miles per hour on his fastball from 2022 to 2023, which is an insane leap.
Gee, yeah, he did.
You know, the 92, what is it? He went from 92.1 to 96.5.
Mm-hmm.
That shouldn't be possible, right? And he topped out at like 101. So the velocity was there, but, you know, it hadn't really come together in the Texas bullpen yet. And then he gets over to Kansas City of all places, right? And I say of all places because poor Kansas City, they seem snake bitten in so many ways, you know, when it comes to players coming and going and not panning out and what have you. And he just has this incredible second half. I mean, almost like storybook, like where did this guy come from? And, you know, it all seems supported by the skills. You know, it's not just that he got lucky. You know, we're looking at, you know, the walk rate was a little high, you know, in the second half, 11%. But he had a 29% strikeout rate with a 15.7% swinging strikeout rate.
Yeah.
that's more than enough to support a 29% strikeout rate. In fact, it suggests that he could go higher, if anything, that there's maybe a little more, you know, top end potential to that strikeout rate. You know, hit rate 29%, yeah, tiny bit favorable, it's negligible, you know. 75% strand rate, about average, you know. The home run per fly ball rate, 5%, low. But the expected home run per fly ball rate was 9%. So he was suppressing quality of contact in addition to missing bats. And so, you know, then we have our BHQ metric, the BPX metric, which, you know, base is league average is 100. And in that second half, he scored a 143, which is really good for a starter. Those BPX numbers tend to skew higher for relievers because, you know, they go all out and they pitch harder. For a starter to have a 143 BPX, that's really good. So you look at that and you go, well, maybe he is that good, but it's hard to believe, right? It's hard to believe.
I think that profile, I think that profile, I agree, Alan, is like the hardest one where you've got like years of somebody who we think we know who he is. And then you get like a sudden, even half season change. And it's like, and like what you were saying, if the skills didn't support Reagan's second half, it'd be an easy box. Right. It'd be an easy box. But for the times where you get a sudden change, like either at the end of the second half or something, it's like, well, yeah, if he keeps being who he was in the second half, then he's going to be great. But I can't tell you which version we're going to see next year. Like that's a really good example of a profile for me that is like really hard to write about.
Yeah, I'm really struggling with him on draft day right now. Very, very complicated at his ADPs. Corbin, you had one more on your negative list, and I'm curious your thoughts on Brad Keller.
I mean, yeah, I'm not going to go too long. I think there's some, you know, kind of top on what Alan said about, you know, Bregenz. I think there's something interesting going on with KC, you know, like for a long time where like they're wasting these draft picks on these pitchers. But I think there's something interesting going on with some of the Kansas City pitchers. So just kind of like a narrative thing to kind of pay attention to. I can't recall there was a pitcher for KC earlier in the season, but I feel Brady like he's injured. Yes.
Bubich? Yes. Brady
Singer. Yeah. They're doing some interesting things. But no, we don't need to spend time on Keller. We can move on.
That's fine. That's fine. Fair enough. Good. Let's talk about some guys that you might be. This is kind of the fun thing. Like, I know I do it with my. I try not to bring it up because Brian laughs at me. But like when I write my catchers or I do my rankings, like all of a sudden, someone will stand out to you when you do the research on it. Goes, okay, I might be, you know, higher on him than I was before or lower on, vice versa. So we'll start with you, Alan. Who are a few players that you are higher on potentially now after doing your player boxes?
Nick Pivetta, for one. You know, I mean, he finished really strong. Those last five starts were really tantalizing. And they coincided with a pitch mix change. I mean, he was tinkering throughout the season. He started the season as a starter. Then he was put in the bullpen as a multi-inning reliever. And then he finished out, you know, basically September as a starter again. And during the course of the season, you know, he ditched his splitter. And, you know, he reduced the usage on his curveball some. And then he added a sweeper, I think about mid-season. And he started to tinker with that. And then there was a cutter as well. And by the end, for those last five starts, when he really took off, he had a pitch mix of about 50% fastball. And he has a good fastball, nice shape, about 20% curveball, and then 10% each of sweeper, cutter, and slider. And something was working because, you know, the results and the skills were agreeing that, you know, that he had found a good mix with those five pitches. And we're talking about a guy who, you know, is capable of throwing 180 innings. He did that the year before. In 22, he went 180. Nowadays, that's like near the top of the league. So you're talking about some serious innings. This isn't like, oh, you might get 140. I mean, yeah, we don't know how many you're going to get, but he's shown himself capable of handling, a full starter's workload. And if he can carry over, a fraction of that improvement into 2024 as a starter, there could be a very good opportunity here for a good ROI, depending on where he's going in the draft. I don't know. I haven't been checking ADPs, so I'm not really sure where he might be going in these early drafts. You guys have a look.
I got it up right now for you. I'll let you know. Pivetta,
it was about 176. I just glanced down. 176.
Yeah.
I do like on the box right below Pivetta's Colin Pache. You call him the king of all vultures. That was pretty funny. That 12 or 13
all,
wins.
All the wins. Alan, why don't you go ahead and give us your other two real quick here?
Sure, yeah.
Especially the catcher coming up. This one just melts my heart. So, yeah, it's telling me.
Oh, God. I didn't see the catcher on the.
This the is catcher like won Bubba's, for the 2023 fantasy season. If you're curious, the catcher won. Here. Yeah.
Oh, I'll be curious to hear your take, Bubba, because you're all about the catchers. William Contreras really jumped off the page for me. I mean, this is an example of a player that I rostered on one of my teams, and I was fully aware of how good he was during the season because I was reaping those rewards, as a fantasy manager. And yet, despite tuning in and seeing the box scores and seeing all the juicy stats that were rolling in, it wasn't until I actually looked at the forecaster box that I realized, wow, yeah, really good season. And these skills suggest that he could be even better.
Yep.
And it's not just that he's 26, I believe, 25, 26.
Yeah.
He'll be 26. Yeah.
He'll be 26. The age is great. There's certainly room for improvement there just going by age. But, he even has a touch of speed and athleticism, which can't hurt. He's an excellent defensive catcher, a very good framer and a good blocker. And so, it's not like you have to swap him out because he's incompetent behind the plate. Defensively, no, he's a great defender, so you're going to want to play him as much as possible. And then on top of that, Milwaukee showed a willingness to use him as a DH as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we look at good hitting catchers like Will Smith as an example, and you go, well, he's a really good batter. They should absolutely DH him as much as possible. I mean, they could get a lot more value out of him, but they don't. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers have other options.
Yep.
Milwaukee, on the other hand, sees this kid and how good he is at getting on base, especially. So he hits up in the two hole a lot. And they say, hey, when you're not catching, when you're not wearing the mitt, grab a bat. We're going to keep you in the lineup. And that's you couldn't ask for anything more with a great hitting catcher, is that, the actual playing time volume to do the damage with your skills. So,
yeah, you pretty much nailed it. The biggest difference between Atlanta and Milwaukee is he actually improved his plate discipline in Milwaukee, hit for a higher average, hit towards the top of the order. Power is still decent, but I think we talked about it recently, is if he wants to hit for more power, the average might drop, but still won't kill you. Regardless, he's going to be just a fantasy stud. Like you said, he's improved every season, and he's young. Like, there's so many just bullet points that lead to really good stuff from William Contreras. And the biggest thing you mentioned there is the playing time's there. They want him in that lineup at all costs. And that is tremendous for William Contreras. So, yeah, big, big fan over here. Don't have to echo that one. Yep. And then you have an outfielder in Miami.
I do. Brian De La Cruz. Honestly, not a player that I would have really thought of in this way until I started looking at the forecaster box. And going back to last season's forecaster, we had already put an upside of 30 home runs on him in the previous year's forecaster, 2023 forecaster, just based on the skills that he had shown in 2021. And, you know, he basically had those same skills, but in addition, he showed in the second half much better contact ability. I think he got his contact, his strikeout rate dropped to about 21%, 22% in that range. And that's pretty good for a guy who, you know, otherwise he doesn't walk much. That's the one area where, okay, you know, as far as selectivity goes, you know, maybe he's not making the best choices in terms of which pitches to swing at just yet. And so he's not going to, you know, he's not going to give you for on base leagues, maybe not the best choice, but, you know, they're going to play him. They don't have a ton of other options right now. I know that's a playing time speculation that I'm making outside of the context of the forecaster, but he has the skills, you know, to hit 20 plus home runs. And if everything clicks, 25, maybe 30. But he won't kill you in batting average as long as he can continue to show that improved contact ability that he showed off in the second half. And that sets him apart from some of the other guys that you'll probably find around that same place in the draft. You know, guys, I'm guessing, who are going to be like in the Stanton, Suwinski, Renfro grouping. You know, those guys come with like serious batting average liabilities. And, you know, with Dela Cruz's contact ability, you know, you might reasonably expect that he won't sink you there. He might actually be an asset. So maybe more like in the Lourdes Gurriel mold, where, you know, not a ton of power, pretty good contact, but if everything clicks, maybe get a little more power out of that, a little improvement in the launch angle, which he showed in the second half of last year. If that sticks and, you know, he manages to keep his, you know, his moderate power intact, okay, now we got something.
I like it. He's been a fun one to kind of track as on waiver wires in recent years. So starting the year with him could be fun. That could be a definite angle to go to. Corbin, who are three guys you seem to be maybe higher on after doing the forecaster?
Matt Vierling is one. He's got some solid plate discipline, you know, good speed, athletic, you know, pretty good defender. Could get a little more stolen base opportunities there to kind of bump up, you know, that kind of floor. Kind of noted that it's more kind of first half dominant. And I didn't put this in the box, but I was kind of poking around and he had like a back injury in the middle of the season, landing on the IL. So like, you know, that kind of thing could kind of affect the second half there. But yeah, a guy that I kind of put in there that I think could be like 15-15, you know, couldn't compile his way to that and give you kind of solid batting average and just good floor. I mean, the runs in RBI might not be there in a lineup like that, but yeah, just kind of a sneakier guy that hadn't spent a whole lot of time on that seems kind of interesting.
Who else you got? Go ahead and go through all three of them.
I mean, you know, just got to say Mitch Keller like five times, you know, it's just it's a requirement.
Higher on than you thought. And wow, highly.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, again, I do dig into the stats a ton, right? But I think there's some of this narrative piece, like a guy like Mitch Keller that's, or just a pitcher in general, that's like constantly trying to hone his craft, whether it's pitch mix, you know, get some, you know, athletic training, like stuff like driveline or tread athletics, or just trying to make those improvements. Like, I think those are guys that I'm all aboard, you know, just guys that are trying to constantly, you know, have that growth mindset. And the final person, that player that I was kind of higher on or was interesting, but, you know, this was before the Will Smith signing, was James MacArthur of the Royals. You know, another guy that I just didn't realize had, you know, put up some saves towards the end of the season last year. Just kind of an interesting profile, right? Like, throws pretty hard. He's got a pretty good curveball. You know, I know Ryan talks about this a lot, but kind of that mix of, like, strikeout skills and ground balls. This guy's got it, you know, and then, you know, again, he, you know, closer on the Royals doesn't always scream kind of excitement, but I think there's some skills and small samples here that might be kind of interesting.
I agree. Let's go to some guys you guys might be lower on after doing this. So, Alan, who are the guys you are potentially lower on after doing this?
So this one's interesting because he actually had a really good season.
Yep.
And that's JP Crawford. And at first blush, you might go like, what, are you kidding? Like, he went from what, 6 home runs to 19 home runs, and he increased his walk rate. And so what's not to like about that? I mean, yeah, some of that is definitely, you know, very positive. The increase in the walk rate by itself is a, you know, really, really good component to add to a skill set. But I'm very suspicious of the home runs. And if you look at the box, I think the expected, he had 19, the expected home runs was what, 11 or 12?
It was 11.
Something in that.
Yep. 11 expected.
Right. Now, 11 expected over the 6 he had the previous year, that's still a really good improvement. But then when I started digging, you know, you just look at the box and you see, well, where did that improvement come from? Was it like a massive increase in exit velocity? No, it wasn't that. He actually tweaked his launch angle, which is an important, you know, ingredient in hitting home runs. You want to hit the ball hard and you want to hit it at the right angle. Well, he does not hit the ball hard. In fact, he's, you know, he's one of the lowest percentiles, you know, in terms of exit velocity, hard hit, you know, essentially like not hitting the ball very hard at all, but maximizing the launch angle in order, and also increasing his pull rate. So I think he increased his pull rate by 10 percentage points. So went from like 33% pull to 43% pull, which is a lot, obviously. That's a huge change in his approach and what he's trying to do with the ball. And the ground ball rate, I think, came down about 7 percentage points, which is, again, a lot. So while those are real changes, and I believe them, I don't know that they'll necessarily entirely stick. We never assume that all of the gains that a player makes in any given year will carry over to the next year. You know, that's part of the regression, right? You have to discount some of those gains in order to come up with a plausible projection. So if we take away some of that and he still doesn't hit the ball particularly hard, yes, he's better. He's better than he was in 2021 and 2022. He's just not as good as he appeared to be in 2023, as far as the expected, you know, results for 2024. So this is a kind of a player where it's like, I'm not saying he's bad, and I'm not saying don't draft him. What I'm saying is you might not want to draft him with last year in mind, expecting him to hit those marks again, because, you know, the skills suggest that he's probably not good. There's one player who he reminds me of, actually, is Didi Gregorius. Didi Gregorius, another shortstop who actually hit the ball about as hard, that, which is not at all, but he was able to maximize his launch angle in such a way that he took advantage of the short porch in Yankee Stadium, and he popped, you know, a couple seasons worth of 20-plus homers by yanking the ball down the right field line at the right angle, but not hitting the ball particularly hard. But that worked for a couple of years. And then of course he got injured, and a lot of the reason why he fell off had to do with injuries, I think, and maybe not necessarily that's an unsustainable skill, but that's a comp that occurs to me where it's like, oh, if he's kind of Didi Gregorius with a much better walk rate, let's say, then, you know, there's certainly a place for that player in lineups. It's just that more of a caution about where you choose to get him in a draft when you're thinking about, you know, JP Crawford and looking at the stats that he put up last year.
It's a heck of a comp. And Didi's playing ball in Dubai right now, I believe.
Yeah, he's in that new Dubai league, yeah, against Bartolo Colon and
Pablo Sandoval, and all those guys. It's awesome. Good. Robinson Cano's over there. Yep. Corbin, what do you have for a couple of guys you're lower on? Because the first one, shocker to all of us, huh?
Yeah, no, I mean, first of all, how dare you talk about poorly about J.P. Crawford? You know, you can't
do that. No, you do have a Mariners fan in the house.
He's potentially going to be their best player. You know, they're just selling everybody away behind Julio. So, you know, it's okay. We'll sign somebody. We'll sign somebody. No, I mean, I was looking at, you know, first I was like glancing, but I was like, I think the market's just going to be totally out. So, like, it's not even going to be, you know, a guy that I'm more on because everybody's going to be a... But I'll just talk about the hitter. I mean, George Springer. I mean, I kind of noted that it was his first 2020 season. He'd ran kind of more often than he usually did. And, you know, kind of one of those trend things we were talking about earlier. You look at the box and it's just like there's a lot of the skill stuff just like down, like especially on the power department. It's kind of one of those things where, like, wow, like there's pretty drastic kind of change there. So, you know, I kind of just worry about some of those things. Like if we're just expecting a bounce back and all that volume again of the plate appearances, you know, I think that's something to be concerned about. Someone I'm not just going to blindly be like that, you know, we could expect something similar again. But, you know, so that was the only guy that I'm maybe lower on right now.
Weird to see, yeah, working with on the Springer box. Just weird to see someone like just max out everything playing time wise. 2020 season, like you said, Corbin, when he's what Springer, he's going to be age 34. Just yeah, the odds of that repeating.
A young buck.
Yeah, are low. Interesting comps between those two, Springer and Crawford, because I think it's just as important when we're writing these boxes to say do not expect a repeat of what we saw last year as it is to nail the next breakout guy. So kind of avoid those. I don't want to call these guys landmines, but just temper expectations versus what we saw last year. Real quick, guys, we've been talking about player boxes the whole time. Outside of player boxes, Alan, we'll start with you. What do you like about the forecaster?
All 25 years of it or so.
I'm going to go with the consumer advisory.
That's a good one. That's a good one. It probably gets turned over.
I'm trying to think what that even is right now.
But it's a good page.
So there's a page in the forecaster that's basically the disclaimer for the forecaster. And I don't know if you happen to have it in front of you, Ryan, but anybody who doesn't know what it is or isn't familiar with it, maybe we just leave it at that and say, you know, it's a reminder that, you know, these are projections. They're created by human beings. You're all human beings. You get it. We're not perfect. We strive to do the job as well as we can. Hopefully, you know, we do a good job, but you should, as the reader of the forecaster, if you were just buying the forecaster for the numbers, you're not really getting the most out of the book. The book isn't about the numbers solely, or even primarily, some might argue. It's about understanding the process that goes behind the numbers and the process that allows us to arrive at the conclusions that we give you. And if you understand the process, then that's far more valuable than any number that we can spit out, you know, for you. So that's why I really like that page, because it's a reminder like, oh, yeah, it's fun to see. Oh, yeah, this guy, 25 home runs, you know, 30 steals. Awesome. But if you understand why we arrive at those numbers and why we arrive at the commentary that we do, then, you know, it's like, you know, teach a person to fish in that vein of, you know, of thinking. And there's so much in the, by the way,
who writes the consumer advisory? Sorry, I had to put it. Who writes it?
That's got to be Chandler. It? That's got to be Ron.
Yeah, I'm reading it right now, and I'm like, okay, this is good. There's like, I can tell why Alan likes this even more now.
Number 6 through 10, right?
Yeah, yes, like, pretty much. I'm like going through these while you're talking. I'm just like, my goodness.
Number 6. If your copy of this book is not marked up and dog-eared by draft day, you probably didn't get as much value out of it as you might have. It's page 10 of the book. We usually tuck it in at the beginning. It's page 10 this year.
Well, I even like the right above number two. If you bought it in bold, if you bought this book purely for the projected statistics and do not intend to spend at least some time learning about the process, then you might as well buy just an $8 magazine.
Yeah, an appropriate amount of snootiness in that comment, but well earned. You know, this is a reason why this publication has been around as long as it has.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
And you know, beyond the consumer advisory, you know, the encyclopedia of analytics that I mentioned earlier, the MLEs. The MLEs are great. The major league mm-hmm. equivalents. So those are tables towards the end of the book where you can find, you can look up, you know, players who are in the minor leagues and have their equivalent stats, you know, projected out if they had been in the majors, for a couple of years in some cases, to give you a sense of, you know, how that production actually stacks up. Because sometimes, you know, we're looking at these minor league numbers and it's hard to tell park factors, the league, you know, hit rate. So there's so many things that can change from league to league in the minors. And so you might look at a stat line and think, wow, that's really great. But you start factoring in all of those other factors and then you realize like, oh, well, for a 28-year-old in single A to hit 27 home runs in a park, you know, that is, you know, 4,000 feet elevation, it's not such a big deal anymore. And the MLEs will reveal, you know, will unmask, you know, both in a positive and in a negative way, you know, depending on who you're looking at. So those, you can find some really good diamonds in the rough. I mean, if you're a prospect hound, okay, maybe you already know those names, but if you're, you know, not really involved in dynasty leagues or keeper leagues as much, that's a particularly good resource. And then the universal draft grid at the end, because I think that tiering, the system of tiering players is really valuable, you know, just visually to have buckets of players that are similar this is kind of a known thing. People have been doing this for a while. It's not going to surprise a lot of people maybe, but I think it's still extremely valuable as a tool when you're trying to you know, make decisions about who to draft and, you know, not fixate on just a single player. You can realize like, oh well, you know, here's the bucket.
Draft grid is always good. It's always at the end. How page is it this year? It's like 276, something like that. I agree. I like the tiering on that a lot. Corbin, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, mostly like the front half, right, where it's like looking at the definitions, all the research articles. I mean, you know, like I get into this problem where we're like, you know, it's a lot of alphabet soup, as Ryan likes to say. We're just spitting out all these metrics and numbers and things, but like really trying to pare it down to what's important and making sure we're understanding what we're communicating, right? Like that's mainly our job is, as kind of writers and analysts, we're looking at all the data and we're trying to pare it down for what people need. You know, sometimes I joke with people that at the end of the day, somebody just wants a list of rankings and a list of names, right? But our job is to kind of look in through and you know, make that list of numbers and names a little more digestible. So,
yeah, I really enjoy the. No one asked me, but I'm gonna say anyways. I really enjoy the articles at the front. I think there's just because you guys get some guest writers plus some HQ writers thrown, and they're not like deep articles, but they're enough to like kind of get you like from Fab from the previous year, or playing time articles or stuff like that. So it kind of gets you your brain working even more before you get to the player boxes. So it's pretty fun in that regard. Ryan, I'll ask you, what is your favorite section of the forecaster besides the part that says the end, or the part that says your name on the cover, I should say.
There's a really good research article, the Stolen Base Recap of 2023. See, I mean, it's just like so well written. That? It's
Field, I think, something Field.
Blumfield?
Yeah, Blumfield.
It's a modern marvel to the English language.
Oh, man. I just want to say I helped with some of the ideas there. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, no, looking forward to reading it all. Actually, like I said, I'm more of a physical copy guy, but just doing the show, perusing the PDF while we talked was actually pretty fun. So I'm going to start, you know, get to the 21st century here and do some fun things. We'll see. But we will wrap it up there, gentlemen. Before we head on out, though, We'll start with you, Corbin. Let people, or remind people where they can find you. Plug all your stuff. You can plug your football stuff. Let people know what you got going on, because you're a busy, busy man.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Good to talk baseball with y'all and kind of see your faces. And, you know, it's good to do that. On X or Twitter or whatever this platform's called, Corbin underscore Young 21. Mostly football stuff at the 33rd team. For some fantasy football stuff, I look at some like high value touch stuff, red zone, go to goal data, things like that. And then for baseball, yeah, it's mostly Baseball HQ with some of the facts and flukes, and I dabbled in a little bit of the Arsenal report last year, but it'll be incoming, it'll pick up steam here once the new year starts here.
That's what I was gonna ask. When on the Twitter feed side, are we flipping back to the good side?
Usually it's after, once kind of, playoff, like real playoff NFL playoffs start, I might take a little bit of a break, and I do some coaching in January and February. So it's kind of like once those things die down, it'll probably switch over. It is hard. It's like, it's two parts of my brain. It's like, I have to close the football tabs. I have to take a break, open up this baseball tab, where it's like, this other website, I can't type in football websites anymore.
That's why I'm not just kissing your rear end here. It's impressive because the depth you write about, I write cliff note stuff kind of when I type, or I just try to be funny or something, where you do deep dives on things, and it's pretty impressive to read. Like your Arsenal reports, I think are awesome. So it's good stuff, of course. Alan, where can everybody find you?
I'm at AC DeLeon on X Twitter. I haven't been all that active, I'll be honest. I've noticed that a lot of people have kind of taken a step back from Twitter and X for various reasons. I'll be posting some stuff on there, certainly as we get closer to baseball season. And then I'll be coming back to Baseball HQ in some capacity to be determined. We'll be talking to Brent about that, and hopefully we'll be contributing probably weekly or every other week come baseball season 2024.
Awesome. And just for the listeners that left listener questions, I didn't ask them because you guys are so smart, you basically wrote the outline for us, so we covered it all on the show. I'm just gonna throw that out there, like everything you guys sent questions were already on the outline, so your questions were answered throughout the podcast, so you gotta listen, you can't just go to the end. So there you go on that one. You got to have a little fun with this. But again, gentlemen, thanks for joining us. It's always fun, kind of like Ryan said at the beginning, we don't do a ton of guests on our show, so it's kind of fun to get, the voices, the faces, all the fun stuff behind the Forecaster and Baseball HQ. So thanks for joining us, guys.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, everybody. Make sure you also follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm Matt BD Intrick. Until next time, this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 90. Catch y'all later.